This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing as directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Canada!
Hey everybody, you're listening to another Akira edition of Booksplode on iFanboy. This is the podcast where we talk about one comic book for a long period of time. My name's Paul Montgomery, that over there is Scotty Young.
Hello.
Hello, and we're talking about volumes 3 and 4 of Akira by Katsuhiro Otomo. And previously, we talked about volumes 1 and 2, so that's as far as we're going to talk about, is up to volume 4. So if you're reading along with us, we haven't read 5 and 6. That'll be next month, so we won't be spoiling any of that. And it's been a while since either of us have seen the movie as well, so we have no idea what we're talking about. But
yes,
lots of characters introduced in 3 and 4.
So many characters.
I'm not going to even attempt to recap what happened in the previous two volumes. Just to suffice to say, it ends with a satellite with a space laser beaming down onto the Earth, and there's still 4 volumes left.
Yeah.
Like, usually that's your last thing. That's your thing that you do at the very end, and that is the end of sort of like Act 1 of Akira, basically. And so what do you do to follow that up? Volume 2 of Akira is wacky. It's a bunch of crazy set pieces. Volume 3 is ridiculous. It's like a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
It is strange. it's like it, to end volume 2 the way we did.
Yeah.
And then volume 3, I mean, Tom and Jerry cartoon, that's actually a pretty good way to put it, because it, the way I explained it today, I was talking to Jason Howard, who's read them all, and the way that I explained it was volume 3 is like 12 chases.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's almost as if he needed a chase scene and wrote a bunch out as possibilities and thought, let's just do them all.
Yeah.
It's like they all kind of felt like any one of them could have been the chase scene. But they just, yeah, they were just, I mean, it is one, it's 300 pages of chases.
They're on a boat. There's a tank chase.
A tank.
I love the tank stuff because it just goes on and on. Like, it's right. Just, it's forever. And it's crazy, and it's going through houses, and there's like little kids in the house, and like, oh, cool, a tank just ran through our house. And at this point, Akira has yet to speak. We're sort of babysitting Akira, who emerged from his crazy bubble in the previous volume, and everybody wants to get their hands on him. Volume three is also crazy because the Colonel is sort of losing his any power, any standing that he has within his big giant war council.
Right.
And I like that he's questioning the use of military force. And everyone's like, but that's what you do all the time. Like, right. That's all you ever do is bring in the army. And obviously there's going to be some fallout after you've used a space laser and it kind of just makes a crater and doesn't kill anything that you were aiming for.
Right.
But what's good about that is that by the end of Volume 2, it doesn't even matter that he's lost all of his power because Neo Tokyo is gone.
By the end of Volume 3.
But God damn it. By the end of Volume 3. I don't know why I keep calling Volume 2. By the end of Volume 3, it's all gone. What's also interesting about this tonally is that he does a kind of crazy, gutsy thing, Otomo, I mean. He doesn't follow Tetsuo for all of Volume 3. You hear about him. You hear about some guy going into a hospital and stealing some meds and stuff because his arm got blown off in the previous volume. Mm-hmm. So it's all about Kaneda. Volume 4, it flips. We don't see much of Kaneda till the end, which is hilarious when he comes back. Right. But it's all about Tetsuo. And so you have these two characters who are at each other's throats for much of Volumes 1 and 2. And then now we get to zero in on not just them, but we get to follow them specifically in each volume, but then also there's a lot of Key. And the great character of Chiyoko.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She's awesome. I was like, that guy's great. Oh, wait a minute. That's a woman. She's really great. And she's like the arms expert for the gang. And she's she calls herself Key's aunt or relative in some way. But that's basically just, I don't know, an explanation. She's just someone who works with her. And she's sort of like Chewbacca.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, she's just like she's like the big strong man that you like that you'd have in any sort of movie where you got it's just this big Hulk muscle there to just crush anything.
And I thought it was just a joke when they sort of first really use her in Volume 3, but then by Volume 4 I was like, "Wow, what a great character."
Yeah.
I really whenever we got her scenes, I was like, "She's great."
Yeah, I loved her. I felt like through these both of these volumes that there were like introducing her in Key. I felt like the one thing that lacked a little bit for me was characterization.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like we have so, especially in Volume 3, we have so much action.
Yeah, especially Volume 3. Yeah.
It's so much action and chasing that we kind of lose touch with any connection of character. There's no real, the last kind of calm moment that you have between Kaneda and Key and her is the one moment, where they're about ready to get killed or mm-hmm. like when they're on the boat and he's getting poisoned.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the last moment that I think, to my knowledge, that you really have a down moment of them kind of chilling and talking and seeing any kind of that old character. I mean, we had Kaneda for two volumes that even in the middle of everything was still, like half hitting on Key and joking around and talking trash and like still being him.
Yeah.
And it was something that I felt lacked he was in Volume 3. So we got a little bit of it. I mean, Volume 4, I felt lacked a lot of character. And kind of was traded in for more world building and kind of, just setting the stage for things. But she was so interesting that I mean, I don't know what I would have done with it, but I felt like, oh man, what's the deal? Cause we also don't get a sense of, we don't get a sense of where all this came from. Right. Like cause we just jump in.
Yeah. Each volume, is sort of, I mean, like, the end of volume two, and I mean the real volume two this time, the end of the real volume two, where I have the space laser and everything, and we have them sort of like, you know, going, each going their own way.
Right.
Felt like the end of a chapter, and then you get sort of thrown into the deep end with volume three. Volume four is a huge, I mean, the way volume three ends with the big explosion. And I like that sort of that's the new thing with these volumes, that starting with volume two, the real volume two, they all end with a gigantic explosion. It was like, oh, no, not again. Like, how is Tokyo blowing up again? But it happens in two, three, and four so far. And but by the end of volume three, you know that's the biggest explosion, and that levels. I mean, there's pages and pages. It's this huge sequence of buildings toppling over, and it looks exactly like that blast that we saw in the beginning of Volume One,
right?
From that destroyed the original Tokyo in World War III. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's going to be a huge change to the, you know, to the status quo, and it is. And I kind of like that it, you know, it's days or weeks or months later. And there's this whole cult build up around, you know, the great Tokyo Empire, and everybody is worshiping, you know, Akira, and he's got this outdoor sort of throne, and Tetsuo is his like prime minister or his vizier, and they heal people, and they give out, you know, foodstuffs and medical equipment and everything. And But I love that each volume kind of feels like a huge, like they're not holding your hand that much.
Yeah. I really like the big brushstrokes that I like the way that they'll jump to it. And I always am a big fan of any story that is, does a good job at showing time pass.
Yeah.
The only thing that I will say that I felt in both of these volumes is I wish that there was at least one or two characters that I could always go to as my bridge, as you know, as the, because in volume three we have Key in Kanada going through most of it, and the colonel, and then we get the great scene near the end with Takeshi the one of the espers.
Takashi, yeah.
Yeah.
Being killed.
Yes, Takashi, you have that one moment. And I feel like when you finally get to that scene, I genuinely felt like, man, I could have used this scene like 100 pages ago. Like,
yeah.
Because it was so good. And I felt like, God, it, like, I don't know if I enough had me going until like, then I get to this last scene. I basically from like page 230 on to the end, which is, which again may be different for our volumes, but you know, the volume three is the shortest of all the volumes, so it's like 282. So, you know, for those last 50 pages are just awesome. You know, like one of the characters that you've been following since volume one, and so far, I mean, the Espers kind of are your. They're the core group they've stayed together. Their status quo within each other really hasn't changed. They seem to have this similar setup as when we first met them. You know, their circumstances have changed, but you know, everybody else has changed groups, changed allies, changed buddies, like everybody, you know, changed status. Everybody's
the purest characters.
Right.
I don't know if they're entirely innocent.
No.
But
they're the ones that I feel like they're a little bit of an anchor. So when they show up, there's almost a comfort for me because I recognize, oh, okay, here's something. Here's the base. Here's my core.
There's my kids who look like old people. That's what I need.
Right. And then when you jump in at four, you kind of have that again where I'm absolutely fine with like the story jumping so drastically to this new Tokyo where everybody's, you know, kind of worshiping Akira. I almost just, because all of a sudden now Ryu's kind of our character.
Yeah,
but we didn't really have that much Ryu, if we did at all in issue. And so and this is coming from someone, I actually read these two back to back yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to read that many, I mean, that's like 700 pages of comic.
They go by fast.
They do definitely go by fast.
I read
fast.
Them in a day too.
Yeah. So when you read them together back to back like that, it almost feels maybe it's a disservice to do it like that, because you almost feel like, wow, I've been reading all this and he's just now showing up, but now he's supposed to be the guy. He's supposed to be my guy. You know, he's kind of the one I'm following or whatever. Which again, it's not terrible, but it's just something that it distracted me a little bit, because it seemed to, from volume to volume, have to shift kind of like, okay, kind of follow this guy. But definitely once you get into four, there's even less of individual characteristics anymore with the characters. Now they're all kind of, especially on the good guy side, you know, well, you know, if there are good guys, bad guys, but,
right.
You know, on the Colonel side or, am I confusing volume 3 and 4 with where Ryu was?
There's a lot of them in volume 4, where he meets up with the army guy,
right,
George Yamada,
right.
With the crew,
right.
Cut.
Right. Yep.
That's mostly, yes. 4, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, there's not a lot of individual character going on. Everybody's kind of on – everybody's in plot mission mode, you know, where
– That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. Everybody is sort of – we have to get in lockstep into – we got to go save this Esper, or we have,
right.
to – or oh no, Akira's being kidnapped. And I like that – I kind of like in volume 3 that Akira just – he gets – kidnapped like 2 or 3 times, and he's just being led along, and he doesn't like say anything in protest. He's,
right.
just, like, whatever. He's just like catatonic the whole time, and they don't know exactly what he is, or like not even Tetsuo,
right.
like, knows what he is or what he's capable of. They just know that he's important, and I kind of like that he's just like this kid, just like whatever, and it's just like the worst possible chosen one, you know, like he's not,
right.
helping out his own cause. Then again, like, who would he be, you know, safe with? Everybody has, you know, different ideas of, you know, where the chess pieces need to be and everything. And but I agree with you. Volume 3, all of the, you know, all the running around and the stuff on the boat, it's exciting, and it can be funny at times. Like, I like the idea that they play with Kaneda getting – he's either food poisoned intentionally, or he says, I might just be seasick. And there's a point where he actually throws up on a guy, and that like takes the guy out.
Right.
Like he like projectile vomits, and that's like that, and that's like almost like him punching him out.
Right.
And I had to like read it over again, and I was like, is that really what happened? He's like, oh, I feel better now. And he keeps on going. I think also when you lose Kaneda, Ki and Chiyoko play it pretty close to the vest, whereas in the first two volumes Kaneda is like questioning everything that's happening, and he's a really good entry point character,
right,
except for those weird moments, you know, where he finds out that his girlfriend in volume 1 is pregnant and he doesn't,
right.
care, and you know,
right.
like that there's moments where he's really callous,
but it's still showing us he's still an entry point into,
yes.
the world even through that, because he's still showing us who he is and the kind of character that we are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of him, and he's telling us, hey, like it or not, this is who we are. We don't give a shit about things like this, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, you lack a little bit of that, you know. Who's my avatar? You know, where's my center? And I think that's the difference. I mean, I think if the story jumped straight out of the gate as a world story, where this is about you just looking at the different aspects of our world.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that it shifts from the first two, where, you know, they kind of, you know, it's a group of friends, and they get, you know, broken up through these, you know, the gang fights, and then, you know, the military and the Akira project, and everything is still kind of interweaving back to this motorcycle gang and the clowns and these two main characters, and all of a sudden then we have two volumes that almost have nothing at all to do with any of those things, you know, where the army is quickly kind of not a thing, because we have the new, what's the guy that's Nezu,
yeah,
Yeah, so we kind of have him come in, and now he's almost taking the old role of the colonel.
Yeah,
in a way. I mean, the one thing that I do like the addition of is the Lady Miyako. She kind of comes in and really feels like she is one of the breath of fresh air as far as character goes. You know, where I feel like she's thought out, like she's well rounded and has attitude and has her own little way of speaking and her own voice and everything about that character I really enjoy. But again, back, she's an Esper, you know, like there's something about the Espers that I feel like Otomo was really connected with, you know, like those seem to be something that he really enjoyed writing.
And it's really interesting that those are kind of becoming our entry point characters in a way, or at least touchstones for us, because they could very easily just be MacGuffin kind of characters, like objects in themselves, because everyone's just after them all the time.
Right.
But I think you made a good point about Lady Miyako, like, and she uses other characters as pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And she just sort of dismisses Nezu at one point, and then she sends Sakaki out and Mozu, I believe. Those are the two girls that are like flipping around and say, whoa, where did these characters come from? That's pretty crazy.
They were awesome.
And like you're that's another one of those things where you're looking at the sequences where they're running towards each other and then she flips over them. And like I can see, you know, the anime in my head. Like I can see an anime, not the anime that exists, but like I can see what this would look like in motion.
Yeah, I mean, by the time we're reading 3 and 4, I am having a hard time figuring out why they made the movie they made. At this point, it has no connection to the story anymore. It's very odd.
It is.
I think another thing that shifts, they do a lot of things out of nowhere and just kind of play it matter of fact, which is okay to a degree. But again, I feel like with this sheer amount of page count that we're dealing with, I feel like I should be way deeper into this world. Like when all of a sudden they have the characters just popping pills and then, you know, their bodies are deforming and, you know, like he's shooting powers and they're exploding heads. And
we've got like this Oracle dude with like a blindfold on and the eye on his head. I was like, whoa, like this is a huge advancement. We know that there are like latent like empaths and psychic characters in this world.
Right.
But they really accelerated that for Volume 4.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I think his ideas are so fantastic, like that stuff. And by the time you get to Volume 4, with I like that this world, like this, he's like the voice on the mountain that watches everybody. You know, the guy who can't see who watches everybody and warns everybody. I love the idea of that, and I wonder what it would have been like. You know, if this story had less, as much as I think they're brilliant, but took up less page count with movement and action sequences and filled it with a little bit more of that part of the world, you know, like the, you know, those characters and what's that like? And, you know, I don't know, you know, I don't, cause I think of things like, you know, Why the Last Man or, you know, or a Preacher or, you know, any of the kind of like longer 7-volume runs that we've read over the years that page count wise still clock in under the totality of Akira, I think.
Yeah.
And think about the amount of information you got out of those worlds, you know, and the characters, you know, like now Why the Last Man definitely is the other end of the spectrum as far as action goes, obviously. But I mean, by the time you're at the end of Why the Last Man, like Yorick was his name, right?
Yeah.
You have like, it's almost like, you know, Yorick so well, he's like a part of your family, you know, like, you know, everything about that guy. You feel like, at least, you know, even if you don't, there's something about it that just feels like I'm connected to this guy. And there's something about this world that I'm I get so excited when I go through these action sequences and all these things pop up, but I'm still left wondering a little bit more about the characters living within this world, because it is such a crazy world, you know?
Yeah.
That especially this Neo, the destroyed Tokyo, like, it's such a cool post-apocalyptic world that I want to know a little bit more. And I will say, this is the first volume four is the first volume where I kind of wanted it to be in color, because like, there's a lot of people wearing bandages and stuff now.
Yeah.
And I was starting.
No, I'm with you on that.
I was starting to lose who people were a little bit. And that hadn't happened before, because A, again, everybody had their own voice and character, and that's kind of went away. And so now I'm left kind of like, wait, have I seen this guy yet? Like, do I know this guy? There's a lot of new characters. A lot of characters are dressed in, you know, baggy coats and bandages. And so I was like, oh, if this was just in color, you know, slight changes in skin tone and hair colors would inform me.
No, yeah, there was definitely, there were sequences where I was like, oh, Connie dies back. I was like, oh, that's Key. No, I'm yeah. sorry. Okay. It's just that they, you know, the bandages and stuff, and you're limited to black and white and, you know, a little bit of gray tone stuff. But
right.
yeah, color would really help in this whole thing. I was thinking, you know, actually, when as I was reading these volumes, I was thinking about Pluto, which I know we both like, and mm-hmm. just, you know, comparing it to another manga, then there's a whole lot of character, you know, in Pluto, I think.
Yeah.
It's been a few years, but you definitely don't get the crazy dynamic action sequences that you get in Akira. So there's definitely a trade-off, but as I was reading this, it was like, I know that, you know, I'm really enjoying Akira, and it keeps surprising me with how big and sprawling the world is and what you know, what he's capable of with these action sequences.
For
but
sure.
I was trying to say, like, you know, when I first read Pluto, I read Pluto before I'd read Akira, and I was like, this is one of my favorite comics I've ever read, you know?
Oh yeah.
And do I think this is better than Pluto? I think it's better than Pluto in some regards, but as an overall piece at this point, I think Pluto is stronger just because it's more cohesive and there's a little bit more impact with everything. And one of the things that came up, especially reading volume four earlier, was there's so many shootouts and massacres in this book at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel almost jaded about it. Like, they're swarming, you know, Miyako's temple, and all the monks and all the innocent people that Tetsuo's aide mm-hmm. Mows down. Didn't have the impact that I wanted it to.
Right.
Because it's just there's so much senseless murder in these two volumes. And that's not me being a prude. That's just talking about quantity versus quality.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in volume two, we start having that a little bit. Our first dawning of that is at the end of volume two, when they're below ground and there's, you know, everybody is killing everybody. But you're okay with it because it's Gar, it's military people, and it's the good, and it's the resistance, you know? So it's kind of like, in our minds, we've grown to always understand that resistance and the opposition, you know, the military, that's okay. Those two people can murder each other, right? Like, mm-hmm. we got that. But yeah, when you start getting into these zones, especially from characters that we haven't been connected to, you know, the right out of the gate, you know, she shows up and she has the big kind of like handheld kind of Gatling machine gun type situation. And it's just like,
Chiyoko, you mean?
Yeah, Chiyoko.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, just laying waste right away. And you know, there's just a lot of disconnect between, you know, some, you know, can I get behind things like that if I'm aware of, if I'm already connected to the character? Sure. If I'm not, then yeah, it starts to, like you said, it starts to feel a little numb. Like, the action sequences are so good. Like, and it's so exciting, and everything is so exciting. It's almost like sometimes you just feel like, I'm not anchored into anybody to necessarily care how it turns out, just that I get to experience it, you know? which, like, on one end I really love because I'm just like flying through this book like, yeah, whoa, this is crazy. But 700 pages of it in one sitting, you get a little desensitized. Maybe that's the point. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
That might be the goal. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, in volume four, would I have liked to maybe have like what, you know, you have Tetsuo who's going through some things, right? And where he's kind of like, we get a brief moment where he's obviously kind of addicted to these pills. Mm-hmm. He's kind of shoving handfuls of them in his mouth. And we, you know, that's just a brief thing. We get these brief moments of this really powerful guy and in his humanity. And then it's kind of, then we don't revisit that again for, you know, 80, 90 pages. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of will check in again. But by the time we check in again, he's somewhere else or doing something, you know, because in this volume we have the girl who's kind of helping him out.
Kaori.
Who at first it's like she's his sex slave for a minute.
He's got this harem thing going on. And it's the way it's set up. This has happened before, or this is right. A routine thing that the guy with the pompadour, who I don't believe he has a proper character name. He's just called Tetsuo's aide or the captain.
Right.
And he's like, you know, he never thanks me for this. I should get one of the girls one of these times. I'd, you know, find them for him. And that scene, I will say that, you know, definitely wasn't numb to that. That was very harrowing and affecting.
Yeah.
Where there's these three girls who have been their clothes are taken away. They're in his like room full of pillows basically, and blankets hanging on the walls.
Right.
And they're sitting there. They're covering themselves, and you can't really see their faces. They're ducking their heads and stuff. And like, God, what is he gonna do? And then he makes them take these pills. And the one girl wants to save her dad, who's sickly. But she doesn't want to subject him, bring him out to one of these mass things where Akira or Tetsuo cures them. Mm-hmm. She just wants to keep him away from that. So she hides the pills and says, I'm going to give them to my dad. And so she is the one to survive this crazy, this crazy orgy where basically Tetsuo links up mentally with Akira and sees inside this kid's head. And again, we haven't heard this kid speak before. We don't know what's going on up there. He just seems catatonic, or he's playing around, splashing around in puddles. And he sees something and it really messes him up. And that trauma causes the girls, the other two girls, to like brain explode. And it's pretty harrowing. And Kaori survives it, and Tetsuo says, well, I'm going to keep you around, and you're going to be Akira's babysitter, basically.
Right.
I think that's an entry point character. That's a character that I definitely felt for. And I was like, get away, get out of there the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, those are great moments. Those are great moments and great characters that I kind of want to latch onto and explore. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to see a little bit more through those eyes. I'll ask you and see what you think. Do you think that it's Akira? Is it Akira doing all this stuff, or is it Tetsuo doing it and just having Akira sit there while he does it?
That's a good question.
Like, I couldn't tell. It was hard for me to tell if this was like all Tetsuo's doing. Like, Tetsuo's kind of like craft. Like, did he craft this whole kind of worshiping situation, and he just has like Akira come out and sit in the chair, and you know, like he's like the kind of false king, you know, like, because it doesn't seem like Akira really cares either way.
And yeah, you have and that's makes it even creepier that we have no idea what's going on in this kid's head. And I don't think we have enough information at this point to say whether it's, but I think we do have enough information to ask the question that you're asking, which is it Akira or is it Tetsuo?
Yeah.
But we have that scene with Tetsuo going to Lady Miyako and saying, listen, what is Akira? What's going on there? And what's that all about? And she's saying, you know, you're taking those pills that excites the powers within you.
Mm-hmm.
And, but they also, how does she put it? They create like a short circuit in the power too. So it's your addiction is suppressing your potential. And just basically all the power on the earth, on this whole planet, is but like a breath of wind, compared to what you are capable of. Like, you can take everybody out right now if you wanted to. So maybe he just isn't sure of what he's capable of. Maybe he thinks that Akira is curing these people, but it's really Tetsuo. I don't know.
Yeah, there was that moment when he cures the guy, mm-hmm. the first guy, when we first realized that, oh, these people are all worshiping Akira. There's just a look on Tetsuo's face that makes it look like he's almost like smirking, like, yeah, fooled him again, mm-hmm. like because the guy all of a sudden can walk, his legs healed or whatever. And it just, I don't know, the way that he drew it just made it seem like, they're all like, oh, hail Akira kind of stuff, but it just, him that he did it, and he's like, yeah, they don't even know, but again, that could have just been me reading into a drawing.
And is he drawing power from Akira? Like, is Akira lending him the ability to do that, or is it all Tetsuo? So you don't know where one stops and the other one ends,
right? And very possibly they'll jump into that stuff in the last two volumes. That's where some of that time is like, I could use 30 pages here, 20 pages there of, again, it doesn't have to be on the nose. It doesn't have to be George Lucas or anything. It can, we can have a little subtext with it, but like, it's almost like I want to spend a little bit more time with Tetsuo in this new way, similar to like, basically what I'm saying is I want more of the moments where we saw him transition in volume two, when he took over the clowns, they didn't give us a ton. It wasn't like him walking around saying, vocalizing his plan or anything like that, but we got moments with him and we saw him changing things and what his motivations were. And we got him, even though it happened quickly and he took over that stuff and there were some big jumps. I still felt like we got personal time with him. To get a little bit out, and for us to go through these two volumes, well, I guess I could only say one volume because he's not really in volume three at all,
right?
But to not get any kind of like real moments where he's where we're understanding his motivation for any of it, like I don't feel like I understand. Not that I don't understand, I don't feel like it's given to me unless I just miss something. That like, what is he doing? It feels like there's a lot of stuff going on, and all this, especially in a time jump that we got, where we went from Tokyo explodes to there's this new place where they're worshiping and gathering outside their little island, and so enough time has gone by for him to at least have some sort of thing. Like we said, we see that he does this kind of orgy situation often, and so it's almost like I just want to know a little bit more about like what's he doing, like what's he want to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are just really internalized. Like the characters just aren't like the exposition that we get, the information that we get is about, as you said, I really agree with what you said in the beginning. It's about building up this world,
yeah,
and setting up the new status quo, but that doesn't extend to the characters and where they are. They're operators. They're moving in and around the world, and they're definitely doing things. They definitely have goals, but it's not necessarily interpersonal relationships and things like that. I mean, the one thing we sort of get teased is like Ki is into Ryu, who's been drinking a lot, mm-hmm. and Chiyoko is being overprotective maybe of Ki. And if there was any time to be overprotective, it's now, I guess. But
right.
Protecting her from him, and they're kissing at one point, but that kind of goes away for a bit. The characters go off on their own. Those three characters literally split up for the rest of Volume Four, and Ryu's got his thing going on with the army guy Yamada, and I don't know if we'll get back to that, except you know, if one of them dies or something and they get to yell out each other's name, you know.
Right.
I want more of those slower scenes where we can actually, you know, get some emoting or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, here, I guess there's two ways that I could look at it. And it's maybe like a Tomo. Like, for example, when's this podcast come out?
Thursday.
When I have Rocket Raccoon in my first issue do something. And I have him do it, and I know why he does it. And it's in the script, you know, that he does it. But nobody says it, and he doesn't really vocalize mm-hmm. anything. He just kind of has a thing. And so as I'm drawing it, I went back and, like, I'm going to have to go back and tweak something in my script, because I was like, I know why he does this. Like, it's in my head why he does this, but I don't think that I properly put it on paper why he does this, you know? And I feel like, to a degree, that may be what we have here with a little bit of Tetsuo in this volume four, which is Otomo has this whole world in his head. We don't have it in our head, but he knows Tetsuo, you know,
like, yeah.
Tetsuo is one of his kids, you know, or in his head, and he probably knows all the facets of this character. And sometimes that, I think our minds can confuse that on, did we let it out or not? It's either that, or he's attempting, and maybe successfully so, and it's my expectations that are at fault, that maybe he's attempting to show things at a little bit more of a, or a little bit less of storytelling structure kind of way, and more of a, this is how things maybe would go down kind of way, which is, in real life, a character would, you know, would find out that his girlfriend's pregnant while he's asking her to do something, and then go get tangled up in some big military plot and never go back to check.
Right.
Because the world's going crazy. And in real life, we don't abide by, you know, plot point two swings me back towards her. Yeah. You know,
I also say, for storytellers, and this is something that I've run into, is you hear all the time that, like, oh, that exposition is so clunky. So you avoid exposition.
Right.
And then your stuff becomes incomprehensible.
Right.
And in the fear of talking too much about what's going on, nobody actually knows what's going on because it's not there on the page.
Right. So, and I don't think that he avoids – I don't think that he's avoiding exposition here.
There are a lot of scenes which are very – like, there's one
– it's straight up exposition.
There's one scene in volume three specifically that I jotted down where they're talking about the spheres, the weird spider slayer things that are going around when the city when the city's under martial law.
Yeah, and, like, the taskmasters or gatekeepers or whatever.
And there's, like, two guys talking about, I heard that you know, they can survive in a nuclear fallout, and when we're underground in, you know, our safe zone, they're going to be up here protecting us. And, like, why are you having that conversation? That's a whole Mammoth thing where it's like, you don't want to do the – as you know, conversation, because nobody has it. As you know, we're brother-in-laws, you know, like that kind of thing. So.
Right.
But I mean, he'll do that for world building and have characters that we've never seen before and we'll never see again saying, oh yeah, he can cure your leg. That's Akira. He's our savior and everything. And, like, mm-hmm. he uses sort of the privates and the sort of the tertiary characters to get that information out, whereas the main characters, there's not a lot of explaining going on. It's just sort of, these are our marching orders, this is what we're going to do for the next, you know, chase sequence. And we're being a little harsh here, but I think that's the realities of these two volumes.
Yeah, I mean, in these are criticisms in a way of me looking at a piece of work that I still find to be absolutely mind-boggling that it exists. I mean, it's still really, really cool. But I also have to remember that, you know, the time between volume one and volume four, it was not like it was a year, you know. this is years of his life that he's working on this stuff that, you know, who knows where his, you know, this isn't monthly comics. You know, I don't believe that he was like pumping this stuff out, you know, every 4 weeks, you know,
it doesn't look that way at least.
Right. So, I mean, we're still talking about stuff that was, you know, he was telling stories. He was telling this big story over the course of time that I'm sure was shifting and wherever his head was at during and things like that. And I think that we feel that in good ways. And I think that we feel that in some bad ways. I think in not bad ways, but I mean, we feel that in some like we said, like a little bit of areas where we feel a little bit lacking, but mm-hmm. I think on a storytelling front, I think that overall my takeaway from four volumes of six. So, I mean, I can safely say, you know, we're well over the halfway point now that for a book called Akira, and now we've had two volumes where Akira is out, I still am very much wishing that there was something about this character that was on the page, like that I like, even in a volume where everybody's worshiping Akira, you know, we still don't have anything really about this character. Like, this character's not doing anything. Should we be afraid? Should we, you know, we've get a couple of the mind, you know, like you said, like the kind of the mind connectors, but that still has more to do with Tetsuo. And I don't know, there's something like even the looking at the cover to volume four, you know, the cover to volume four, you've got the little kid in his like the, you know, full king in his cape, you know, and his scepter and the broken throne. I mean, that is a cover. Like, I want, like, why is this little kid with this much power pretending to be king on this island in the middle of a destroyed city? And why is everybody afraid of him? Why is everybody worshiping him? Like, I wanted some more glimpses of that, because right now it's like, I feel like I'm getting more of everybody else's panicky chases than I'm getting anything about Akira or living on that side. It's just like, you know, I'm on Ryu's and what's his face? The guy, what did we say? The guy with the haircut?
Yamada. George.
Yeah.
I think his name is George.
So, you know, it's like we jump in with them and they're kind of running and everybody's running and the colonel's running and everybody's, it's like we're always with somebody running, and I just want to be like, I want to know more about this. Like I want to know more. And again, we got two more volumes. So maybe the next two volumes are just going to, you know, blow us out of the water, and then I'll eat my words. But, you know, I can only go by, I guess I feel like mentally, you know, we're not talking about 30, 40, 60 pages here, right?
Yeah.
Like, talking about two volumes, seven.
Yeah.
Of comic. And I feel like that's plenty of room to make me feel like connected to this major, you know, the namesake of the book. You know?
The tension is, it's sort of a fun high to chase, though. I kind of like the mystery. And there's something too, especially in volume four, to the whole, it starts as early as volume two when they're going after Akira, this whole thing of the emperor having no clothes. Like, he's just a kid so far. He's just a kid. We have hints of, well, okay, he blew up Tokyo at the end of volume three, so maybe that doesn't count, but we have, you know, we don't know what's going on internally, and all of these, you know, this, a whole empire, a whole religion almost, like, builds up around that, so there's definitely, I think, some commentary going on there on the kind of things we rally around as human beings and where we find, you know, hope or inspiration or anything, and what'll cause us to have a sea change in just the way we go about our lives, like what people are willing to kill for. just this display of power. And I mean, they're worshiping a character that they don't, I guess, have the whole story that at the end of volume three blew up the blown up version of Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
He had a hissy fit because he almost got shot and created this huge explosion and killed all of their friends and family. And now they're worshiping him. So there's a fun irony there, at least. And,
but he didn't have a hissy fit because he almost got shot, did he?
Nezu was trying to shoot him, and I think it was, I don't know if he was aware of
he flipped out because he lost it because Takashi came up and told him, like, that was the first moment, and that's why I love that scene so much, is because Takashi came up and connected with him. And so I was like, it's you, it's really you. You haven't changed a bit. And he's holding him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's kind of embracing him. And you could see, like, he's almost, there's a, like, it's okay, we're still here. You're kind of home with us. And then bang, Takeshi gets shot in the head. And when Takeshi goes down, he basically watches, like, over the course of, like, two or three pages. Yeah, it's like, it's basically 3.5 pages it takes for Takeshi's body to hit the ground.
Right.
And so you see it kind of like going in and out, and the other two Espers kind of losing their shit. And then you see Akira look down at the ground. And when he finally, like, it clicks, like, Takeshi's dead in front of him, that's when he grits his teeth and then grabs his head. So it wasn't that somebody's trying to kill me.
Oh, no, I didn't think that. I thought it was more the psychic fallout from that, everybody being upset.
Oh, okay.
But you're saying something different. It's that he had a connection and then he lost a connection.
I feel like that up until now, I mean, he's just been being carried. He's just been like with these people that are mm-hmm. nothing to him.
Yeah.
Like they're nothing. I mean, this kid has lived underground for how long?
Right.
Like he's lived in some kind of crazy jail cell deep within the earth for however long, and now that he's out, he's just being carted around by peons to him, you know. Right. Like, so it's almost like, you know, entertaining them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he doesn't seem that stressed. He never seems in fear of anything. He just is like, oh, I'm just roaming around with these people. And it's not until he connects with Takashi that he actually shows any emotion mm-hmm. by, watching. Obviously, just those few words, you know, Takashi being like, oh, it's you. It's really you. You haven't changed a bit. Just those little words shows like these two have a history, and he's introducing them to the other two Espers. And whether or not they have a history, there just seems to be like, oh, there's my people. These might be my people. I might have a place or, you know, something there. I don't know what the connection is. It just feels like there's a connection. And even when they're not, I mean, I don't think that I know if I feel like there's a connection until you see him going down and the blood splatters on his thing and he's watching and he's looking. And, you know, the thing is the other two are screaming and he's not screaming yet. Like he doesn't scream along with them. So I don't feel like it's a psychic connection in that way where Takashi's down and now they're all – because I feel like if it was – they were all psychically linked.
It would be simultaneous.
It would be simultaneous, like instantly that clicks in all of them, like one of them is down. But if you look, like the two of them are losing it instantly because obviously they're like – they're probably connected, but they're also like emotionally distraught. Like this is one of our people. And then he's kind of like – what? And then he kind of grits his teeth and he lets it go later. And the way he kind of like drops to his knees and kind of feels a little bit more emotional in a way, in some kind of way. I don't know what it is, but it's obviously like a controlled, like I'm getting ready to fuck these people up, you know? So I don't know that part of like that thing is what I'm kind of talking about. Like the emotions and the questions that he raises through subtlety there, I love. And I kind of wish that I got that more often.
Yes.
With all the other characters. And that's all I'm talking about, I think, is that those things are lacking, where I also love the mystery. I don't need Akira kind of like laid out for me, but I want to actually feel like it's a mystery. And I feel like by the time I get to end of volume four, the mystery itself has actually started to dull, and I'm asking fewer questions because I'm taking me a really long time to get any answers. Mm-hmm. And so mysteries are great if I feel like a mystery is ever going to start to reveal itself even a little bit. Everybody loves True Detective right now.
Right.
And because there's a mystery going on, but I think it's pretty safe to say that we all probably won't care if we get to the end of episode 8 and they don't tell us who did it. Because the mystery was just part of it. They also did a lot of great character stuff and gave us enough of answers of the mystery.
Yes.
Disappointed if I never find out who killed these women. Because I had a great time, you know, slowly getting parts of the mystery pulled back, maybe, but learning a lot about the characters. And that's some of the stuff here is this word Akira has showed up since volume one. And so at this point, through four volumes, roughly, we're talking about, you know, 1,200 pages of comic. You know, 1,200 pages.
It's a lot of comic.
It's so much comic. So when you talk about 1,200 pages and at that point, the mystery itself is dulling a little bit for me if I'm not, you know, involved a little bit in like what this kid is or, you know, what his intentions are or anything about him. I mean, they're showing me moments of him on his own, you know, obviously making kind of the DNA strand type of little swirls and, mm-hmm. and playing with the rocks, and that stuff's cool. But sadly enough, by the time they're showing me that, I've stopped asking myself who he is, you know? And
even when Tetsuo asks the questions of Lady Miyako, I don't know why he's asking questions. It just seems like he's asking questions to ask questions.
Right.
I don't know that there's a whole lot of weight behind those questions. I don't necessarily know what Tetsuo wants at that point. I mean, his big arc for this last volume is, you know, trying to quit those pills because he sees it as a weakness. He can be stronger if he doesn't use the pills. And so like this very minor character thing of, I want to be the best I can possibly be, which is, you know, all well and good, but I don't know why he cares about what Akira is, except out of slight curiosity.
Yeah. That's a great point. Again, the first two volumes, when he first started to become the Tetsuo that we know now, it was still connected to who he was before. So his motivation, it was about leading a gang and ruling and everything. And he's kind of doing that now, except all the character that went along with it previously is now gone.
Yeah.
And it's just him. And it's just in a room. And now I'm like, well, I don't know what the purpose is now. Before, it seemed like he was trying to one-up. It almost was like, well, here's a nice little story about two friends that grew up. And in some ways, that story ended with volume two when it came to a head.
Yeah.
And they fought in the warehouse and they came out. And then, you know, or no, the warehouse was the first volume.
That was the end of volume one, yeah.
The end of volume one, they come out. You know, and then they still are kind of a little bit in a battle with each other through two. And I think that we got that. But then it seems like once we go past that, it's like, oh, two volumes of this were about the weird dynamics of two friends and the different paths they go down, getting entangled in this big military cover up and the kind of military project. And then, you know, we go into volume three or four and that project kind of is gone now. There is no military. There's no project.
Yeah, they're taking away the different stakes. And I mean, we talked about that last time that, you know, I was shocked with knowing that there were six volumes, that by the end of volume one, that's where they're getting to this heated point in their relationship where they just flip a switch. Instead of being friends, now they're like these lifelong rivals. And that's cool to reveal that over time. Mm-hmm. And they lay a little bit of pipe for that in these volumes. But they've already blown past the point where they're like at each other's throats and want to kill each other. I thought that happened so quickly in volume one. And it almost feels like they blew their wad a little bit, or Otomo blew his wad a little bit, that you know, if that continued through these four volumes, then we would at least be able to latch on to that.
Yeah, and you'd have the weight of those two buddies. And I mean, have you read 20th Century Boys?
A little bit of it, yeah.
It is called 20th Century Boys, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Okay. That does a similar thing that I think is kind of cool, where it's time, you know, it's doing the back and forth, the past story and the current yes. story, where that's kind of what, you know, Urasawa does in Pluto and in 20th Century Boys, a little bit of what I'm talking about, what I think I want out of some of Akira, in that history and weight and some substance in the characters. Because I think in 20th Century Boys, you're seeing the modern day guys that are all scattered around and don't really know each other anymore. And, you know, this new threat coming out, and it's mixed with the past version of himself as kids. And you're getting genuine character moments that aren't just there to point me forward, or not just there. Like, we're showing, you know, you're showing these kids in their field making their pact. And so all of a sudden, within just a few pages, I have 20 years of history just from a few kids running from a bully out in a field, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they could have played a little bit with, you know, again, I think that we're finding things to discuss, which I think is another great thing, another fantastic thing about Akira, not only its storytelling, but its length, is it's giving us this much stuff to actually discuss.
Yeah.
The ins and outs and the what ifs. And I'm fully prepared for us to probably have a lot of these questions answered, and again, probably eat a few of our words following, because, you know, volume four does end with Kaneda like at the being like, oh, is it over?
That was great.
You know, like, so yeah, I mean, we're probably gonna get back into that, and I'm gonna be like, oh, well, here's all the stuff I was talking about. But yeah. You know, it's hard to decide how the pacing goes. And I guess that's kind of an exciting thing too, is like, what is the pacing to a six volume, you know, where are we talking about at the end of that? So we're still somewhere in the realm of, is it 2000 pages at that point? Like over
there. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the total page count of all volumes are, but let's 2000 or over. So definitely, like, it's hard to get like where I am in the timeline of the story, because, and part of me, while I'm, you know, it does sound like I've probably nitpicked this more than I've enjoyed it, I really did enjoy it. Part of me actually is really excited that I feel this like out of sorts, because I don't know where I'm at, and I don't know what's going to happen, because it's not kind of the method that we've grown to tell stories in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years of comic booking, you know, where it's getting harder and harder to read through a 5 or 6 issue arc and not be able to be like, oh, we're on page 17. I know what happens on page 18, you know, like, mm-hmm. We're in a world where we have, I mean, I think that we've seen that in a lot of movies that we go see now, you know, now that every single screenwriter in the world has read the same 3 books, and we all feel it every time we go to the theater and see the movie. You know, we're counting the minutes, and we all can pretty much nail down at what minute what will happen.
Yeah,
you know,
it's about 45 minutes now. All right, and so, yeah. 2,146 pages.
Wow.
According to one count. And so next time we're going to talk about the end of Akira 5 and 6. And I think we'll also talk about the movie at that point. And I'm pretty excited to talk about how this all wraps up. And then also, like, this isn't all in the movie. And how do you decide what to include and what not to include? And I guess we can also ask ourselves, sort of, is a feature film the right way to go with this? Obviously, the success of the movie over time, and just how many people love that movie is one answer to that. But are there other answers to that? So check out the movie, check out volumes 5 and 6.
Yep.
And we'll be back in a month to talk about that. So Scotty, thanks for joining me again. This was a whole lot of fun.
Thanks, dude.
All right, guys. If you have any questions or comments, you can send those along to contact@ifanboy.com. Remember to check out our regular Pick of the Week podcast each and every week. And that's over at ifanboy.com. See you next time.
Bye.